Hi, I'm Dr. Safaya, a medical doctor who doubles as an email marketing expert. In here, I take you behind the scenes of failed and successful email marketing campaigns. You get to see what these amazing individuals have tried that worked and did work in email marketing. If you've been curious and like me, you want to know what other people out there are really doing in email marketing, then join me as I go behind the scenes. Hello, listeners, welcome to Email Marketing Experiment. And today I'm really excited for this episode because it's not every time you have somebody who has been in the game for a very, very long time come on the podcast, right? I mean, some of us have been doing this for like maybe 3 years, 8 years. But when you see somebody who has been in the industry from way, way back and has been consistently doing one thing for a very long time, then we need to give a round of applause, celebrate them, and learn from the wealth of wisdom. And so today I have an email marketing specialist with 15 whole years of experience in marketing, developing email strategies and campaigns for companies, amongst many other things. And she is an expert in B2B email marketing. Cornelia, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you, Ayabano. I'm really excited to be your guest.
Welcome, welcome. Now, I mean, we're going to be looking at your webinar email sequence that works like a charm. But before we go into that, I would like our listeners to get to know you more. So can you introduce yourself and share a little about, what you've been doing and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Cornelia. I'm a freelance digital marketeer for 15 plus years. The time really flies. I have a feeling I started yesterday. I help online businesses build relationships with their customers and increase conversions through email and social media. I have a master's degree in graphic design and graphic technology, but I found my passion in digital marketing field.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. That's amazing. Now, what part of the world are you joining us from today? And for you, is it coffee or tea over there?
Well, I live in Europe, in a beautiful country of Croatia. It's really hot here these days. We are a coffee nation. We are a nation known for the sipping their coffee for hours. We like to sit at the cafes for hours with just one coffee, maybe two. So, I mean, coffee is a way for us to relax and also to socialize.
Oh, wow. Do you have a favorite flavor?
No, I love coffee. I think it's more like a feeling, like a relaxing time, so I don't have a favorite one. Oh. Every coffee is a good coffee for me.
All right. So how did your journey into email marketing begin?
Well, I was first working as a graphic designer, and then the global economic crisis hit the world in 2008, and I found myself almost without the work. I mean, I still have my job position at the agency, but there was no work to be done. So, but also in that period, the social media entered the Croatian market, and after one education, I got addicted to Twitter. I was constantly there. I met so many great people over there that are still my friends. And since I was working in the agency, and the agency collaborated with the big global companies like P&G, Philips, Pernod Ricard, and they were all interested to hop on this new emerging trend of social media. I mean, it was like Facebook in the first place, then the Twitter, and that was it. I mean, before that, there were only blogs and bloggers for cooperation. So I start learning from my peers and from the peers from the US market, because they were already doing the job and they share their knowledge. And my first experience in digital marketing was through social media. And later came the email marketing. I mean, the email marketing exists longer than social media, but in our market, it wasn't accepted as much as a marketing channel. So a few companies had a newsletter, but it wasn't a thing. And I met a guy on Twitter who was in email marketing, and I subscribed to his sequence. I didn't know it's called sequence back then. It was like, you subscribe, I'm going to send you emails. So I was like, okay, I can do it. So I was learning from him, and it was like, wow, email marketing is not just newsletters. There are so many things. There are something called lead nurturing. There are sequences. There are so many stuff. And it was really, really interesting. So I was searching through the internet and finding whatever I can on the matter. And then when I decided to go solo to open my own business, a year later, one client found me through the LinkedIn. It was in 2018 to be their email marketing coordinator. So this was finally my chance to apply all that I have learned throughout the years. And I have to tell you, 7 years later, they are still my clients. And we made significant improvements to their email marketing strategy. And I have to tell you, a lot of things change in these 7 years. So many situations that we couldn't prepare for, like COVID, for example. So it was really, and it still is, an interesting journey.
Wow. 7 years, like working with one client for 7 years. I mean, that's amazing.
Like sometimes when I talk about them, I said we, because after 7 years, it's like business cooperation. I know everyone working there. So it's like I'm part of the company.
Wow. That's amazing. And I mean, seeing how email marketing was done back in 2008, I find it really interesting. You know, email marketing has been around for such a long time, and you've gotten to see like the evolution from, you know, how it first started to how it is now. And I think that that is such an amazing thing. Is there any one thing that maybe used to be around, or is there any one thing you will say that has changed when it comes to email marketing beyond what you've shared already?
Well, what changed the most is the number of emails we get in our inboxes. I think that's the biggest change.
More people are using it, and everybody's now doing email marketing.
Especially after the COVID. I mean, everyone went digital, so I ran into information when I was going through the HubSpot course, email course. I ran into information that we received 20 to 30 emails per day, each day. And it was like, oh my God, they're right. I checked my inbox. Is there? There are many more in my inbox, because as an email marketer, I subscribe to lots of things, sometimes just to check how they are communicating, what they're sending and stuff like that for research.
Yes, we all do that. All right. So in your business today, or in the work that you do, what would you say is the role of email marketing?
The main role is to be concise, to be brief and to the point. So no more long emails. Like sometimes they work, it depends on what you're offering, but you have to be short and to the point in each and every one, every email, if you are planning to get conversions from them.
Okay. So your email marketing is to, I mean, beyond what it is also focusing on helping you get conversions.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a good one. So now let's begin to go deeper into what we're supposed to talk about today. I mean, you have this webinar email sequence that works like a charm. And in this particular sequence, what were you trying to achieve that even led you to discover this method of doing your email webinar sequence? This sequence is actually a three-part webinar reminder sequence. And it's not every time we get to see a three-part webinar sequence. Sometimes it's way more, right? So what led you down this path?
Well, this was a result of the practical constraint, because my client decided to have webinars every week and we didn't have enough time to send 6 emails. So we cut to 3 emails and we wanted to see, will this work? I mean, we didn't have any other option. And we already had some shorter sequences for some other webinars because we share free materials, and sometimes there are not enough free materials to send on the specific topic. So we did try already, and we knew that it worked for one part of their contact base. But this is for smaller categories, for smaller lists. And the change they made was for this bigger part of the contact list. We were almost certain that the number of emails won't affect the results, but you never know until you test it. So we were like, let's go and see what will happen.
All right, good, good. Now, you mentioned that this webinar sequence was 6 emails before you shortened it to 3. So those 6 emails, could you give us a bit about what those sequences were like, email 1 to 6? What were you focusing on in those different 6 emails?
Well, we call them reminder emails. So we send the first the invitation email for the webinar 2 weeks before the webinar. And then we need to remind people that they registered for the webinar, because as you know, everyone has lots of on their minds. So we tend to forget that we registered for something. So it started like first email, we remind them about the webinar title, when will it happen, and we shared some free material that is related to the webinar topic, because we want them to also prepare for the webinar. You know, not just this is not the type of the webinar where you just sit and listen. This is the webinar where you actually can get answers to your questions. When you have a specific situation, you can ask for your specific situation and get the answer. So we want them to prepare for the webinar. And each email is the reminder with some free stuff they can read or some checklist or stuff like that. We have only one email that is a plain text email where we ask them a question to describe their challenges regarding the webinar topic. And this is the email where we expect replies. So when we switched from 6 to 3, we kept the first one where we remind them about the webinar and share the free content. The second one is this one with the question. And the third one is the one day prior reminder. We also have the fourth one, but this is the Zoom's 1 hour before the webinar reminder. And we don't have any specific content there. So it's three email sequence.
That's interesting, because a lot of times when people do webinars, especially if it's like a webinar where someone signs up like 2 weeks before, we have people doing way more emails in terms of you don't want people to forget that they signed up for something and you feel like there's a lot of competition in the inbox. So I've seen situations where people do like a daily email, or they do like in the first week about 3 emails. So depending on where you join them from, right? Mm-hmm. And in the last week, at least maybe it could be 5 to 3. And then on the day of the webinar, we could send out like maybe another 3 emails. And this is something I've also tried before, where on the day of the webinar, we send a minimum of 3 emails. If depending on the time of the webinar, so that's another thing. So let me say within the last 24 hours prior to the time, we send about 3 to 4 emails, including the 1 hour prior to the one that would have gone out maybe 12 hours or thereabouts. Then into the webinar, we actually send out one other email to let people know that, oh, we've started without you kind of thing, right? Brings us to about 4. And all these are within the 24 hours. Now, prior to the 24 hours, we could also be sending out like a daily countdown. We usually like to do a countdown to the day of the webinar. So I think the minimum we would have done would be like 3 days countdown. But before then, we would have been sending out maybe alternate day or maybe 3 other emails. And so when I'm saying just 3 reminder emails, I'm like, okay. And then again, I've signed up for webinars and I know how many emails I have gotten in my inbox prior to the webinar. Part of why this really piqued my interest, because I'm like, I mean, you cut it down in half, right? And you're still going with it, which means that it's working for you. So look into like what you were able to achieve with this, because for you to still be doing it, that means it's really working well. So when you shortened this sequence, were there things that you expected or didn't expect that happened? Did you notice any change in like the webinar outcome prior to when you were doing 6 emails and now that you had cut it down to 3?
Well, I mean, everything was as expected. I mean, as I said, it was a necessity to cut it down. Yeah, I understand what you're talking. And maybe this is working because they are B2B. First. Second, they have really narrow topic, let's say. Like, they have people who are attending almost each and every webinar. And sometimes it's like 300 people, sometimes it's 500 people, sometimes it's only 50 people, depending on the topic. I mean, it's, but we never tried more than 6 emails. Now you got you tackle my curiosity. Now I would like to try more than 6 emails to see how this would work in B2B. I mean, I can understand if it's, I mean, if it's something that is related to B2C, I can see why more emails can work. But I mean, I'm always in favor of less emails if I'm going to be honest, because especially after I learned 20 to 30 emails per day in our inboxes, how are your results of those emails? I'm interested in those that you send in the first week after the registration.
So the ones that I see that have like the most responses in terms of opens would be the first few days. And then the last 24 hours. So the last 24 hours are usually built around urgency. So you see that people are responding to it because they don't want to miss it. Then the first few days, because they are just joining and they are new, so the engagement is still pretty high. So the first email, the second, the third. But the wider space it is, sometimes you might notice a bit of a dip in terms of the open rates, or a slight variation in the range. Now, if the timeline is longer, so the timeline between the webinar and when they started signing up, then depending on how you choose to engage them, there might be a bigger variation from the open rate. So let's say we were having the 80s, 70s, 90s in like the first 3, then it might come down to like the 60s, the 50s, even the 40s. But by the time you get to that 24 hours, then it picks up again.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense. I know when I register for some webinar, I always react to those reminders. Although the most important for me is when I register for the webinar is that I get the email where I can add the date and time in my calendar. That's the most important email for me. After that, everything is like, if I have time, I will check it. And yeah, I like to get the reminder, but three reminders in 24 hours sounds like a lot, but it does make sense. It does make sense at some point. Yeah.
I like that calendar one too, because I realized that, you know, calendars are tools that we can actually explore with our email marketing, in the sense that beyond the emails you're sending, this also helps to add like an extra reminder to your subscriber, because it will give them like a pop-up.
Yeah.
So they'll give like the email notification and then also give like a pop-up. So that's like extra measure. And then people who are actually serious about the event and want to show up would usually click to add to their calendar because they really don't want to miss it. So that's a good one. I also love the fact that you do a reply email where they get to ask questions. So are these questions tailored to what you're going to, you know, talk about in the webinar? Or is it like purely research? Or is it like, okay, you want to use it as low-key to also like improve deliverability, or a mix of, you know, all of that?
I mean, the most important thing is that, you know, when you have topic of the webinar, you can approach it from different angles. And no matter how narrow your topic is, you always have things that you are talking that you will describe in more detail, and some that you will just mention or describe briefly. So with this email, we get specific questions. I mean, we ask them what is their challenge regarding the topic of the webinar, and we get some specific answers, some concrete problems, some opinions about the topic. So the presenter then knows which parts of the webinar are more important to the users, so they can explain it in more details, and other parts they then just mention briefly. So this is why it's helpful for the presenter to prepare. They don't wait until the last minute. They don't wait until the webinar. I mean, sometimes some questions pop up during the webinar, but this way they can prepare better for each webinar. So it's like some of the webinars are repeating webinars, so they have them twice a year, but each time this webinar sounds differently because of the questions and challenges the registrants share.
Oh, I really like that. So you're able to tailor your messaging and help your subscribers better just because you have an email that helps them, you know, helps to get those questions out of their mind and into a place that you can use. I think that that's a very smart and powerful thing that you have going there. Now, I'm just wondering, you do a lot of webinars, you have people on your list. So are you sending the webinar emails and reminders to everybody, or are you just focusing on that segment that signed up for the webinar?
Only to registrants. I don't see the point in sending to those who didn't register. I mean, they got the invitation, they didn't respond to it. There is no need to bother them. They didn't show interest. Maybe the time is not suitable for them or something like that. And since they are repeating the webinars from time to time, they will have time. Also, they have all the webinars recorded and have them on their website, so you can easily watch them anytime you need.
Mm. That's a good one, because I know that sometimes some people will want to, because they already have an email list, they will now want to send to like everybody for them to come to the webinar. But I like the idea of sending to just those who, you know, raise their hands and indicated like, I'm interested in this. Now, let me just come back to the emails a bit. So you have three reminder emails. Like, how are they 1 day apart, 2 days? What's the time interval between them? And do you automate them, or you send them, like you schedule them?
They are scheduled. So the first one is sent 4 days before the webinar, sometimes five, depending on when is the weekend and when the webinar occurs. The second email is 2 days prior to webinar, and the last one is a day before the webinar. So 24 hours before the webinar, and the fourth one that I mentioned is an hour before the webinar.
Okay, I like the way you staggered it. That's interesting to see. Now, when we're looking at these emails that you're sending out, now you work majorly in B2B, and I'm wondering, as regards the format of the emails, are you doing like plain text, design heavy emails, or is like a mix?
When it comes to the design, I mentioned I'm the designer. but I don't do design for my email clients. They always have their in-house or some freelancer designers. But I'm the one who creates the rules. So in B2B, I like to keep the design minimalistic, because people are used to, I mean, in B2B, we all communicate through emails. It's still the most important channel. So I want people to have a feeling that they are addressed from the person, and all the emails are sent from real person name. And we add the company. We use, sometimes it's just a logo as a header. Sometimes it's like a strip with a logo and some headline, or if it's a newsletter, it has some title. I don't use many images because there are not so many attractive products in B2B most of the time. But for example, in the case of software, I like to add screenshots from the software. If the email is about the part of the software, about the feature, I like to circle this feature, to point arrow, stuff like that, so that people, when they enter the software, they already have a picture in their mind how this looks like. So in B2B, I rely on the email text and CTA buttons to bring conversions. I mean, the goal is to build a relationship and trust, because the buyer journey is long in B2B. And the point is that they trust my clients, and when they are ready to convert and they need this product or a service, my client is the first one who pops on their mind.
Okay, okay.
And when it comes to B2C, like e-commerce emails, I worked mostly for the e-commerce companies, they need to be well designed. I mean, those are the attractive products. You need to show people images. We are all visual. Most of us are the visual beings. So you need to show them images. You need to have a great copy. You need the text also, especially now when people are using AI summary. But you need to go with design heavy emails. I mean, I don't think that you don't have to build trust in B2C. You have to do it as well. But buyer journey is shorter, and people are more willing to make impulsive purchases. So these emails really need to stand out. Like in e-commerce emails, I will use emojis in the subject. And in B2B, I don't use emojis in the subject, for example.
That's interesting. You know, now from what you said, I have two questions, right? So you mentioned AI summaries and how the fact that people can, summarize emails using AI. So you open your inbox and it's like, do you want a summary? And so they may not read the email, but they might just say, okay, give me like an AI summary. And then how you need to ensure that your email is, evolved to fit in with this. That means that if somebody wants an AI summary from your email, they should be able to get what it is that you're trying to pass across, even if they didn't open it. And then how that plays out across, especially like e-commerce, where it's a mix of text and image, but the images may be a lot. And then sometimes some people actually have like images joined together and very minimal text, as opposed to those who have blocks where some are text and some are images, but you won't know the difference except you check. So how do you think that these AI summaries, or how do you think that AI would affect the way we do email marketing, or the way email marketing is evolving?
Well, what I think it will make us to be shorter as possible and to the point as possible in less words than ever. But it's not just something AI related. I don't know. I don't remember the last time I got the long email. I mean, all the emails are shorter. So at this point, I don't see the need for the AI summaries unless it's a real business email, like I write email to my client explaining a lot of things and he needs a summary, or they need a summary. For the marketing emails, using AI summary is, if the user has to use AI summary, something is wrong with the email, if you understand me. Because if you write the long emails, people don't have time to read it. Yeah, they will use the summary and you will probably use a plain text email. But for the e-commerce, B2C e-commerce, images, as you have to have an alt image text. That's something that AI summary can read. You have to have your copy needs to be as a text. If you have some description, but most of the time, e-commerce emails doesn't have so much text that you need to use the AI summary. You can easily scroll through the emails. So I don't think that right now it has a great effect other than in communication between the colleagues in the company and with the suppliers.
Okay, okay. Now, we've been talking B2B, B2C, and some of our listeners might be new to email marketing. They may know that, you know, B2B is business to business and B2C is business to consumer, but they may not understand fully what exactly the difference between the two is. So as regards email marketing, can you tell us a bit, considering you've experienced like both sides of things, the difference between B2C and B2B email marketing?
Well, in both cases, you are sending email to a person, so you have to have this in mind. But in B2B, business to business, you have a chain of supply most of the time. So the person that you are writing, sending emails, might not be the person who makes the decision about the purchase, but just the one who research. So you have to have this, keep this in mind. And in B2C, like e-commerce emails, you are addressing the person that is purchasing. That's the simplest I can explain. So you are sending the email to the person that has a credit card or PayPal account or the Revolut card that will pay for the product.
Yes, that's actually pretty simple and very straightforward explanation. So let's go back to our webinar sequence and let's look at what the performance was like as regards, you know, trying out this, shortening it, and the overall impact that it made that has allowed you decide to keep on using it, you know, for the longest. So let's hear from you. What were the, you know, results/performance of this sequence? What was it like?
Well, the email results remained pretty much the same, no matter the 6 emails or the 3 emails. They have a really large list, so many people register, and the open rates of these emails are like 30 to 40%, and click rates are around 9%. The number of attendees, I mean, it depends on the webinar topic, but we didn't notice any change after introducing the 3 email sequence. There were no more or less. It was like average number of attendees.
That's good. And you still got the same results. So that means that with less emails, we're still getting the same kind of results and same kind of work done. And I think that this is interesting because a lot of times people are like, oh, send more emails. But here we see send less emails and, you know, still get the results, which means that sometimes we don't really need all the very complex strategies. We just need to find what works in our audience and the list that we are sending emails to.
Yeah, I mean, they have experience. They're running the webinars for years now. So they have experience and know who are the people who attend the webinars, those who need to solve specific problems and like to hear a solution from the expert. So this works for them. It doesn't mean that this three webinars sequence would work for everyone, but it's worth testing.
So that means everybody should, number one, actually take out time to understand their audience and know what it is that, you know, works best for their audience and should test out things. Sometimes the testing comes from like the situation, and then other times on our own, we can actually say, oh, if I tweak this in this particular sequence, what would change or would I do better? You know, that kind of thing. So actually test so that we keep improving. And that's one thing that I definitely subscribe to.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. We need to test all the time. I saw the other day on LinkedIn, someone said that A-B testing in email is like wasting time. And I was like, no, it's not wasting time. You just have to know what you want to achieve. It's not like I will test the subject, but the previous subjects were just fine. Okay, I have a new idea. I read some conversation from salespeople with the potential customers, and I noticed some things, and I want to test if the audience will respond better to this type of the subject. So you have to have some premise before you test anything. But yeah, I think the best thing in digital marketing overall, you get the results really fast. I mean, you send the emails and you get the results within 24 hours. And you know, this works, this doesn't work. You know, that's why it's really a nonsense not to test things, especially when you hear from someone that they tried something, it worked. It's worth to put some effort, but the most important thing is that you know your audience, that you know their interests and their needs and their problems. After that, everything is like, you always have to try to improve the things, even the things that work, that work for years.
Definitely, definitely. Now let's shift gears a bit and go into what we call open rate confessions, where we actually talk about places where, you know, things didn't go as planned or the messy middle in email marketing, you know, so maybe a campaign that didn't go the way you wanted it, something that failed, or a mistake that happened, for example, where you send an email that was supposed to have been scheduled or send an email that was supposed to go to like a small segment, to like the whole list, you know, those kind of messy parts of email marketing that we usually sweep under the carpets. Do you have any interesting stories for us?
Well, one of my clients recently had a campaign for the pretty new product. I mean, they had the old version, they created the new version, but they didn't raise awareness before that. I mean, they did. They sent the week before the promotional campaign, they send the awareness campaign that brings some results and brings some learnings. The promotional campaign went wrong. I mean, wrong. They didn't sell anything. I mean, it did have open rates and click rates, but the overall conversion, the expected conversion didn't happen. So the lesson learned was that the users don't know what they were offered, they need more education about the product, more about the product benefits, about the product features. So before you run a campaign, a promotional campaign, this was a discount campaign, first make sure your audience knows what is your product for. That is one of the recent learnings. I mean, it's not like I didn't know it, but it was like, okay, let's try it. Let's see what will happen. And if anything, we did raise awareness because the product has a free trial option. And they did get some free trial users from the promotional campaign. So it didn't fail completely.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And how did you feel about that?
Well, I don't like when my campaigns fail, but this was like we discussed it and we decided to try it. I mean, sometimes, I mean, our customers don't know the campaign failed. The email was well written, so the email results regarding the open rates and click rates were okay, but the final conversions, we didn't have any final conversions. So it's also, I like to consider these things also as a test. I mean, we now know that we are not going to repeat something like that.
Definitely. And I like that you talk about education because sometimes it's like we have our list and there are certain things we bring and we just feel like they should already know because we've been talking about it. And so it's like we're doing a discount. And I've had like a similar experience where you're doing this discount and you feel like everybody should already know because you've been talking about it. And so you're emailing these people, like people that, you know, already know about this particular thing. But the truth of the matter is that nothing stops you from still going on to still educate them a bit more, even though they may know about it to an extent, because now you want them to make a buying decision and you're even adding an incentive to it. So I think a lesson from this and from your experience would be, you know, irrespective of how, you know, what it is that maybe the relationship you have with these people, you should still go all out with your messaging, handling objections and all of those things. Education to be very particular when you are doing, you know, these kind of campaigns. Because in my experience, I think I thought about the fact that, well, these people know that I have this program and I'm even offering like a discount. So they should go ahead and buy it because there's a discount. So you're writing emails that you know that will tell them about it, but then you're focusing more on telling them that, oh, the discount will almost go and all of that, when you could have been educating them. Yeah. So I think that's the takeaway.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm always in favor. I mean, I like thinking about the emails as a way of conversation with the user. I mean, you drop in people's inbox. It's not like social media. On social media, you make a post and everyone sees it. And this is like more personal because it lands in your inbox, in one person's inbox. I mean, in 100 person's inbox, but the person should have a feeling it's like meant for them. We just wrote for them this email. And when you get your contacts to feel like you appreciate them, that's why this email, plain text email with just a question, works like charm, because people like to know that you hear them, that you care about them, that you want their opinion. I mean, nobody likes to buy from the people that are not interested in you. Now I mostly buy online stuff, but before I went to the shops, physical shops. Whenever I wasn't noticed by the person working there, I would just go out. I didn't feel recognized. I was like, maybe they think I don't have money. I'm just watching, but I didn't get any reaction. So it was like, okay, I don't need anything from this shop. And whenever I was in the shop where person spoke to me, where the seller spoke to me, asked me about my preferences, what I'm looking for and stuff like that, this is the place where I would buy. And now that most of the people purchase online, the email, it's like this seller where you ask them what they need.
I find that interesting. Definitely. I'd like to get your opinion on a series of questions, things that people debate, you know, questions that would usually come up in the email marketing world, especially with the experience that you have. So here's the first one. Now, when it comes to new subscribers on your list, should a new subscriber finish the welcome sequence before they start receiving your regular newsletters? Or is it better to send a mix of both from the start?
Well, the welcome sequence shouldn't be too long. That's first thing. You want to learn what their interests are and stuff like that. I think in my experience, you can mix it.
Okay.
But you have to be careful that your welcome sequence is not an email a day, but like 2 or 3 days apart, and it's that is not too long. And if you have a newsletter in this period, if you're sending, for example, weekly newsletter, yeah, you can send them also the newsletter. I don't see why not. I mean, they show the interest in your products or services, so why shouldn't they be informed?
That's good. That's an interesting one. Now, are you team double opt-in or single opt-in?
Double opt-in always.
Okay. And then when it comes to launches, will you have a preference for seasonal launches or evergreen launches?
I'm not sure I understand the seasonal and evergreen launches. Can you explain me?
So some people would usually have like their launch periods where they are live launching the products. And then some people will set up like an evergreen sequence to launch their products, like all day, every day kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe the webinars during that period are not live webinars. They are more of pre-recorded or pre-recorded sets to be live and all of those things. So people feel like the seasonal launches are time consuming in the sense that you're doing everything for that launch. And during that season, you're actively launching. But with the evergreen, it's like set it and forget it. So everything just keeps running in the background on autopilot.
Oh, well, as an email marketer, I like having things running in the background and not thinking about them, but I need to think about them. So that it depends. It depends. I mean, the evergreen launching is much easier when you test it and see it's working, you can almost forget about it. So let's say I'm more in favor of evergreen launching.
All right. Now you mentioned that your team double opt-in. Do you want to tell us a bit of why?
I like to have a confirmation from the user that they left their emails because they are interested in the product or a service. And double opt-in is the only thing that can tell me this. I'm so get used to this double opt-in that I don't even consider. So double opt-in gives me assurance that the user at that point really wants to receive the emails. If they single opt-in, I'm not always sure and think that the bounces are much higher when you have a single opt-in than the double opt-in. Yeah, you have some pending double opt-ins for months and some of them don't confirm it, but it's okay. They decided they don't want your emails. So yeah. That's why double opt-in always.
So double opt-in is like an extra confirmation that these people really want to stay. All right. Now, before we wrap up, I would like our audience to know where they can find you. I mean, I do know where I found you, but where they can find you and how they can connect with you.
Well, they can find me on LinkedIn. I'm not some heavy user. I don't post really regularly because other obligations, but I'm responding to the messages. So you can find me on LinkedIn. And also in my About section, you have my email, so you can contact me by email.
And that's great. And do you have any exciting projects that you're currently working on?
Well, since summer is coming, the only excitement I have now is vacation soon. I'm overwhelmed from this first half of the year with all the projects. So I'm really looking forward to some time off.
That's so important.
Yeah.
I mean, after we've finished the hustle and bustle, even if we don't finish it, I mean, we should be intentional about taking vacation. So yeah. I find that pretty amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and bringing so many years of experience in email marketing to share with us. And this has been a really fun and interesting interview. So don't forget to follow her on LinkedIn, connect with her. I'm sure if you want to learn more from her 15 years plus in the industry so that you learn how to retain clients for 7 whole years and more, you should connect with her on LinkedIn. Thank you so much. Until next time, everybody, don't forget, this is Email Marketing Experiment. Subscribe, share, and invite your friends to come listen to us here where we talk about what we've tried as working and isn't in the world of email marketing.